first, we look at the calendar. Today is Saturday, 25th of Rabi al-Thani, 1447 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 26th of May, 1404 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 18th of October, 2025 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Let's learn more about verse 2nd of chapter I read from the Holy Quran.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Allahu alladhi rafa'as samawati bighayri 'amadin tarawnaha thumma istawa 'alal 'arsh wasakhkhara ash-shamsa wal-qamara kullun yajri li-ajalin musamma yudabbiru al-amra yufassilu al-ayati la'allakum bi-liqa'i rabbikum tuqinun.
It is Allah who erected the heavens without pillars that you can see. Then he established himself above the throne and made subject the sun and the moon, each running its course for a specified term. He arranges each matter. He details the signs that you may, of the meeting with your Lord, be certain.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
This verse unveils a scientific fact which was not manifest for anyone at the time of the revelation of the Quran. At that time, the Ptolemaic system governed over the scientific centers and the thoughts of people. According to it, the planets and heavens were considered as the layers of an onion, which were located over each other, and the earth was in the center. About 1,000 years after the revelation of these verses, the knowledge of mankind realized that the mentioned theory was utterly wrong, and the reality is that the celestial planets each rotates on the fixed axis in its own position, suspending and also invariable without having anything to lean against.
My life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I when I have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know, amidst all the darkness, everything which makes no sense, know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong. That often lies, as I don't need anyone, anything in life, but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
So as I told you, today we're going to speak about the fear of being without your phone. All of this means nomophobia. Have you ever found yourself getting anxious or even panicked when you couldn't find your phone? Does the thought of being stranded in an isolated place with no cellular service find you with a sense of dread? If so, you just might have some of the symptoms of nomophobia. Mobile phones have become a ubiquitous part of modern life. Not only do they serve as a way to communicate, but they also act as a social network tool, personal organizer, online shopping tool, calendar, alarm clock, and mobile bank. While they are without a doubt beneficial devices, some suggest that over-reliance on digital devices may be a form of behavioral addiction.
Have
Have you ever felt your heart sink when your phone battery flashes red? Or panicked when you can't find your phone in your pocket? For most of us, it's a small inconvenience. But for people with nomophobia, it has a true fear, the intense anxiety of being without a mobile phone or losing connection. Nomophobia, short for no mobile phone phobia, describes the overwhelming fear of being separated from your phone, running out of battery, losing signal, or even being unable to check notifications. While many of us feel uneasy without our devices, for people with nomophobia, the fear is so strong it interferes with daily life, causes, and psychological background. So why does this happen? Psychologists believe it's linked to our growing dependence on technology. Phones have become more than tools. There are calendars, social networks, entertainment, and even our sense of safety. For some, the idea of losing access to these functions sparks intense anxiety, almost like losing a lifeline. Studies even show that young adults, who grew up surrounded by smartphones, are especially vulnerable to this phobia. Real-life impact, the impact can be surprisingly severe. People with nomophobia might check their phones hundreds of times a day, sleep with their devices under their pillows, or feel panic when separated from them, even for a short time. Social situations, travel, or areas with poor reception become sources of stress. And ironically, the very devices meant to connect us can leave people feeling more trapped than free. The good news is that nomophobia can be managed. Therapists often recommend setting boundaries with technology, like digital detoxes, scheduled phone breaks, or gradually increasing time away from the device. Cognitive behavioral therapy can help reshape the anxious thoughts, while mindfulness practices teach people to stay calm and present without relying on constant digital input. Nomophobia shows just how deeply technology has woven itself into our lives. While phones connect us to the world, for some, they also create chains of dependency. The challenge is finding balance using technology as a tool, without letting it control us. So the next time your phone dies, take a breath. Maybe it's not just lost connection. Maybe it's a chance to reconnect with yourself.
IRIB English Radio presents today's special, Every Day for 15 Minutes. Today's special.
Be like the earth, humble and wise. Be like the rain, pouring all your love to every soul.
Now, ways to reduce phone separation anxiety. Try a few minutes of deep breathing or meditation in the morning instead of checking social media. We often go to browse your phones by default. But by choosing a different non-phone activity, like a deep breathing or a simple focus meditation, you can decrease your attachment to your phone. It's also just a nicer way to start the day in a stress-free way. Let your battery drain to zero without reasonable, safe circumstances. One tried and true method for many anxiety disorders, particularly phobias, is exposure therapy. After afraid of a dead phone battery, try sitting with a drained phone battery while you're at home, sitting without access to your phone while it charges for increasing periods of time will show you that you will still survive without it. This is today's special and why we can't be without our phone. The National Institute on Drug Abuse for Teens suggests that this cell phone separation anxiety may be more common in teens and young adults. Young people in this age cohort are mostly digital natives, meaning they were born and brought up in the age of digital technology because they had early experience with computers, the internet, the cell phones. These devices are often an integral part of daily life.
So have you ever heard of the term intermittent fasting? If you're in the health and wellness world, then I'm sure you probably have. It's a trendy way to lose weight based on compressing the time window of eating. Usually the hours of eating are open from noon to 8 p.m. or even as small as 2 p.m. to 6 p.m., 4-hour window. The concept builds in parameters so that the person who would reach for the donut at 7 a.m. and 8 a.m., they won't. They can't. Today, you and I, together, are going to make the term intermittent screen time fasting a thing. Yep, it's going to become popular. We're doing it right here. According to Data Reportal, as of 2023, the average American spends 6 hours and 59 minutes on a screen per day. And there is no sign of this number reversing unless you make the conscious choice to do so. You've probably heard a friend say, hey, I'm going to go on a social media fast for a week. My question after someone whom I know has done this is always, did you miss it? And their answer is, nope. So why isn't it as easy for everyone to turn off their phone and put their screens down? Nomophobia. Yes, there's actually a phobia which describes the fear of being without a phone. That's the world we live in now.
So, today we learned more about verse 2 of chapter read, and also we discuss about nomophobia, that means the fear of being without your phone. I think that's very interesting topic to discuss more about, so we choose it for further discussion on today's special. We leave you in Allah's blessings and fi aman Allah.
لا إله إلا الله الله ربي محمد نبي علي إمامي لا فتى إلا علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي
لا إله إلا الله الله ربي
محمد نبي علي إمامي
لا فتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي
You can talk it down, turn the other way. Fear the truth, but it won't go away. Can you hear it calling? Yeah. You can write it down, but nobody cares. It's an untold story of our biggest fears. It can reach you with no warning. Yeah, yeah. When the sun goes down and there's nothing
of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalam and welcome to the Hadith of the Day, where time is teaching me today's real life decisions. Today's wisdom comes from Imam Ali alayhi salam, who said, if the supererogatory harms the obligatory, then abandon it. What a powerful principle. Let's unpack it. We all love doing extra things. Pray more, volunteering, reading, helping others, even learning a new skill. And these are beautiful actions, no doubt. But what happens when the extra distracts us from the essential? Imagine someone who spends all night in voluntary prayer, but wakes up too tired for the morning prayer, which is wajib. Or someone who gives away money in charity, but has not paid back their debts. Or someone studying all kinds of spiritual texts, but ignoring their family, their job, or their basic responsibilities. This Imam alayhi salam warns us against. In other words, don't let the good distract you from the necessary. Psychologically, it's actually quite common. It's called moral licensing. When we do something good, we often feel licensed to slack on something else. For example, I prayed so much today, so it's okay if I skip my chores. Or I gave charity, I don't need to apologize for my rude words. See? But here is the trap. Shaitan isn't always trying to make you do evil. Sometimes he just wants to confuse your priorities. He whispers, why not do something good and forget what's right? See, that's how he wins. Not by making us stop good deeds, but by shifting our focus away from the core of our responsibilities. The Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, once told us, God does not accept voluntary deeds until the obligatory are fulfilled. That's the divine order. Duties before extras. Substance before style. So how do we apply this? Make sure you pray your five daily prayers before focusing on long night prayers. Of course, both are good, but first things first. Provide for your family before donating all your wealth elsewhere. Respect your parents and your spouse before joining hours of religious lectures. Because religion isn't about doing more, it's about doing the right things in the right order for the right reason. So today, take inventory. Are these extra things you're doing that might be getting in the way of your true duties? If so, realign, refocus, and remember the wisdom of Amir al-Mu'mineen. If the nawafil, those supererogatory, harm the fara'id, the obligatory, leave them. Because in the eyes of God, priorities matter more than performance. Thanks for listening. Sometimes less is more, especially when it's focused, sincere, and rightly placed. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. I'm
welcome to Women of Resistance. Despite being severely visually impaired, Samahar Al-Naji managed to live a normal life. She knew every nook and corner of her home and didn't need to see to function optimally. Surrounded by her husband and sons, she found some comfort in the occupied land, despite the constant threats and harassment from the IOF. But she lost all that in the ongoing genocide being perpetrated by the Zionist regime on Gaza. Losing her husband and being constantly displaced from one place to another, she says it's hard to mentally map out her ever-changing surroundings. Her sons, meanwhile, suffer from seizures and anxiety due to the constant fear as their bodies are consumed by rashes due to the constant insect bites that take over the tents in summer. Here is the story of Samahar.
Palestinians have always lived in service to others, regardless of their personal circumstances. A desire to do for others has often helped this community at the very worst of times. Being visually impaired at the best of times under Israeli occupation would be a struggle, but Samer tried to live a life, a full life, despite the challenges. She would need that resilience for the darker days ahead. Samer recounts an example of some of the injustices suffered at the hands of Israel during this time and the lessons in defiance that were taught by her family, especially her mother. Samer and her family knew that one of the best weapons at her disposal was education. Existing in the midst of a genocide is a life or death struggle. Now imagine that fight with a pronounced disability, without a husband's protection, and with children deeply impacted and likely suffering from severe PTSD. There seems a deliberate cruelty in the ways in which the disabled and vulnerable are treated now. The genocide has made existing obstacles nigh on impossible to overcome and added an additional layer of inhumanity that makes life almost unbearable. There is a powerful Palestinian rebuke of the Western plans for Gaza. The unrelenting grind of life is only made bearable with God's grace. The litany of issues Samer and her boys must wrestle with each day reads almost like a horror novel. For Palestinians like Samer, the concept of Arab unity is dead and buried like Gazans under the rubble. For Palestinians to have a fighting chance, there has to be a coming together of the Ummah. Samer's story is sadly not unique. The Western-backed Israeli genocide has cost Palestinians so much, and it's a debt that the world can never truly repay. But perhaps we can begin the process of atonement by listening carefully to what Samer has to say.
Joining me in the studio today to discuss Samahar's struggles is Aveline McCorgan, an activist with the Spartacist League, a Marxist group. Welcome, Aveline.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me, Sakina.
And you're most welcome. Aveline, you know, any woman, every woman and man and child in Gaza today is going through a really difficult situation. But, you know, Samahar's problems are compounded by the fact that she's blind. And not just that, but, you know, if we the stories of her children, the trauma they are living through, you know, having seizures because of the things that they see. You know, when this is over, if at all they survive the genocide, you know, are these children scarred forever? What kind of a generation are we looking at in the future?
Thank you. Very good question. She's obviously an extraordinary woman, and I think the courage and determination that she shows, in spite of all the obstacles, is symbolic of the struggle of the whole Palestinian nation to survive, to refuse to be written out of history by the genocidal war of Israel. So, and I think her courage is a very good illustration of what drives the Palestinian national liberation struggle. And I'm glad you mentioned the youth and the trauma that they suffer, which is unimaginable. But also your question points to the future. And I think the most important thing there is to draw the political lessons. If I may mention Northern Ireland, I grew up in Ireland, and although the armed struggle ended there in 1998, the young generation still experiences trauma of a struggle that they did not even live through. And I think there's a lesson there. The lesson is that as long as the national oppression exists, Britain's not driven out of Northern Ireland, as long as the national oppression of the Palestinians exists, that trauma will not go away. If I may mention something for your viewers in Iran, there was a lot of sympathy for the Irish struggle in Iran, and in the early 1980s, they renamed a street in Tehran for Bobby Sands, who's a hero of the Irish national struggle. I believe it was a street that ran very near to where the British embassy was. So that was nice.
Absolutely, and I know Iranians have supported the cause of liberations and justice throughout the world, really. At the moment, you know, they are paying the price. We just saw the 12-day war that happened, illegal war. The Lebanese, the Yemenis, you know, have paid the price for supporting, you know, the cause of justice. But on the other hand, you know, Samahar talks about the fact that their neighbors, their brothers, the Arab nations, you know, they don't see them. The reality is that they see them, but they close their eyes to their plight. I mean, UAE, we've just heard recently, has condemned the Palestinian attack on, you know, the settlers, the Israelis, who are actually the occupiers, but they don't see what is happening in Gaza. What is possessing them, these Arabs?
Let me just say, first of all, since you mentioned the war on Iran, my organization, in the Palestine demonstration in London, immediately after that war, our banner said, stand with Iran and Palestine, because many groups on the left here did not stand with it even under that attack. Okay, but to your broader question, it's a very good question. What about the Arab regimes? And I think the same question also applies to the axis of resistance. And so to answer the question, I just want to zoom out a little bit to what is the overall global situation there. American imperialism is top dog, dominates the world. Israel is the armed fist of American imperialism in the region. And part of what they do, in addition to the genocide of the Palestinians, the overall effect is they set the peoples of that region against each other, divided along religious lines, Shia versus Sunni, ethnic lines, and so on. And those regimes that you rightly point the finger at, their priority is always to protect their own power base, to maintain themselves in power, to maintain stability in their own countries. And that puts them against the interests of the masses in their own countries. And the support of the Palestinians is never their priority. Now, similar thing can be said about the movement in the West. But my point is, a winning strategy for the Palestinians, we think, should look to the masses of those countries to rise up in a mighty struggle against those regimes, against imperialism, and against Israel, as opposed to looking to...
Absolutely, you couldn't have said it better. I've been very interested, you know, how you've described the situation in the Middle East and, you know, the different factions and what they stand for. Let's come here to, you know, to the West now, you know, being Britain, in the belly of the beast, so to say,
yes.
Because we created the
yes.
occupation in the first place.
Yes.
We see a UK that is in shambles right now. I think anybody can accept that, you know.
Yes.
The government going, you know, reshuffling because of corruption scandals. We
yes.
thought we were in the past. you know, with the Tory government. It's becoming fascist, or maybe it's always been fascist. That, do you think the curtains on October 7th have been lifted and we are seeing the West for what it truly is?
I think certainly the momentum within Britain is driving to the right. And I think the key question for is there's been huge support for Palestine, for example, in Britain, and you know, massive demonstrations. We have participated in those demonstrations, but always under our own banners. So why, in spite of all those demonstrations for almost 2 years now, is the momentum, why is the direction of motion going to the right? And why have the demonstrations, the mass support for the Palestinian cause, not been turned into an opposition to the Starmer government, which is has been arming the genocide? And part of the problem with that, we think, is political. The pro-Palestine movement is very much tied to liberalism, which is tied to the established order, the British political establishment. Mm-hmm. And the British political establishment is a lackey of American imperialism, and so it's a red line for the British ruling class that you must support Zionist State of Israel in everything that it does. Mm-hmm.
How do we get out of this? Can we ever get out of it?
Yes, we can get out of this, but it is a challenge. For example, a new party has been declared in Britain by Jeremy Corbyn and Zara Sultana, formerly Labour members of Parliament. For that party to succeed, we think that a number of things must happen. First of all, they must ditch liberalism, break with liberalism. They must turn to the working class. It is in the interest of the working class to fight against British imperialism. They are the force that can do it. But the left, and including the Corbyn movement of the past, has alienated the working class. So we think they must be organized as a force that will win the working class. And on the question of Palestine, they must clearly say no to Zionism, you know, within the new party.
Absolutely, there is no room for that at all, especially in this time. But Adrian, very quickly, we are almost out of time. You're talking of the working class. Your organization fights for the working class. Very briefly, tell me, you know, what is it that you do, and how are you linked to the Palestinian activism?
We seek to rebuild the socialist and communist movement on a solid political foundation against imperialism, against Zionism, and against the ruling class, whether in the Middle East, but also here. And that means drawing a lot of lessons from the past, from the failures of the past, and, you know, putting forward a strategy for now, strategy to win.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's so fascinating for me, you know, when I hear people from such different political, cultural, religious, outlooks, but at the same time, from whichever angle we are coming at, it's a common cause of justice, you know, against imperialism and fighting for the humanity of people like those of Palestinians. Thank you so much, Evelyn. I really appreciate you being with me today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thank you. We leave you with the sounds of Palestine by the artist Safe. Until next time, goodbye.
Thank you.
let's recite the Quran.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Welcome to this edition of Let's Recite the Quran. You're listening to IRB English Radio. My name is Muhammad, and with me again the usual group, the usual gang. We have Brother Masoom, we have Brother Ali, and Brother Hassan and Brother Hussein. Welcome to this edition of Let's Recite the Quran. In this episode of Let's Recite the Quran, inshallah, we will be continuing the recitation of chapter number 67, Surah Al-Mulk, which is the first chapter of the 29th part of the Quran, Juz 29 of Quran. And in this episode, we will be continuing from verse number 26, meaning that we have, in the previous episodes, finished reciting from verses number 1 till verse number 25. Now, inshallah, we'll be reciting verse number 26. Brother Hussein, can you please take the honor of reciting verse number 26 for us, beginning with A'udhu Billahi Minash Shaitanir Rajeem.
A'udhu Billahi Minash Shaitanir Rajeem. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. قل إنما العلم عند الله وإنما أنا نذير مبين.
أحسنتم. The إنما at the end, right? It's what kind of a mad?
It's a جائز منفصل.
جائز منفصل, meaning that the mad that follows, that has a hamza following it, right? You can recite it up to 4 or 5 beats, or you can keep it to 2 beats as well. Mm-hmm. It's all up to you. But be consistent once again. If you are, for example, reciting in Jaiz Munfasil elsewhere and you did 4 beats, continue with the same 4 beats everywhere you see Jaiz Munfasil. Right?
قُلْ إِنَّمَا الْعِلْمُ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ وَإِنَّمَا أَنَا نَذِيرٌ
Say, the knowledge is only with Allah, and I am only a clear warner. Next verse, verse number 27. Brother Masoom, can you recite verse number 27 for us, please?
Yes. فَلَمَّا رَأَوْهُ زُلْفَةً سِيئَتْ وُجُوهُ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا وَقِيلَ هَذَا الَّذِي كُنتُم بِهِ تَدَّعُونَ
سِيئَتْ.
Oh, that was wajib.
Yeah, so it was a mad wajib. Whenever we see a mad that is followed by a hamza, it's in the same word. It is a connected and a compulsory mad, right?
فَلَمَّا رَأَوْهُ زُلْفَةً سِيئَتْ وُجُوهُ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا وَقِيلَ هَذَا الَّذِي كُنْتُمْ بِهِ تَدَّعُونَ.
Right? Zulfatan si'at. Okay. What ruling is applied at the end of Zulfatan?
Ikhfa.
Ikhfa of noon and?
And seen.
Seen. Seen is a mouth letter. Whenever we have a noon sakin or tanween in actuality, which is a noon sakin at the end, connected with a mutaharrik mouth letter, we apply the ruling of ikhfa. Ikhfa means we silence the noon a bit and we give a nasal sound with a stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's ikhfa is always with a ghunna, correct? فَلَمَّا رَأَوْهُ Originally it would have been زُلْفَةً سِيئَتْ. We say زُلْفَةً سِيئَتْ, correct?
Yes.
وُجُوهُ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا وَقِيلَ هَذَا الَّذِي كُنْتُمْ. كُنْتُمْ again is what? Similar to the previous ruling, Zulfatan si'at. Over here, instead of seen, we have ta,
نون ساكن أنت كنتم به تدعون أحسنتم
فلما رأوه زلفة سيئت وجوه الذين كفروا وقيل هذا الذي كنتم به تدعون
But when they see it approaching, the faces of those who disbelieve will be distressed, and it will be said, This is that for which you used to call.
Verse number 28. Brother Hassan, you think you can handle 28?
قُلْ أَرَأَيْتُمْ إِنْ أَحْلَكْنِيَ اللَّهُ وَمَنْ مَعِيَ أَوْ رَحِمَنَا فَمَنْ يُجِيرُ الْكَافِرِينَ مِنَ الْعَذَابِ الْعَلِيمِ
أحسنتم. Be confident in your pronunciation, in your makharij. Don't be hesitant. Either you're correct or you're wrong. You'll be corrected if you're wrong, right? When you're reciting, be confident in your makharij. You see these things with a humming sound, which is shows that you're not confident. It's not very differentiating between the two words. It's not very good recitation. When it comes to قُلْ أَرَأَيْتُمْ Remember, Hamza has a cutting sound. Not قُلْ أَرَأَيْتُمْ Give it a very strong cutting sound. There is no problem in that. قُلْ أَرَأَيْتُمْ إِنْ أَهْلَكَنِيَ اللَّهُ وَمَنْ مَعِيَ Why do we say وَمَنْ مَعِيَ and not وَمَنْ مَعِيَ Brother Hassan, why do you think it's like that?
Because we should have the idgham.
Idgham of?
Mim.
مَنْ مَعِيَنَا مَنْ مَعِيَ
Hanun.
Very good. Idgham of Noon and Meem. We have Noon Sakin with a Meem Mutaharrik next to it. In this case, we have Idgham with Ghunna. Idgham with Ghunna is done with which letters? Yamun, Ya, Meem, Wow, and Noon. Correct? Whenever we have the Idgham of Noon Sakin with any of these letters, Yamun, we do it with Ghunna. Idgham with Ghunna. We drop the sound of Noon. We emphasize the sound next to it with Ghunna. Mamma'iyah. Correct? أَوْ رَحِمَنَا فَمَنْ يُجِيرُ Right? In this case again is what? Same ruling. Idgham of Noon. Instead of Meem, we have Ya over here. It's again with Ghunna because it's one of the four letters. Yamun, Ya, Meem, Wow, and Noon. If it was Ra or Lam, Idgham will take place but without Ghunna. Correct?
فَمَنْ يُجِيرُ الْكَافِرِينَ مِنْ عَذَابٍ أَلِيمٍ
In this case, مَنْ مِنْ عَذَابٍ أَلِيمٍ There is no idgham or ikhfa with mean and عَيْن. Right? Because عَيْن is a letter of throat, first of all, so there is no ikhfa. Ikhfa is only with letters of mouth. And there is no, and it's not one of the yarmanun letters for it to have idgham. And then عَذَابٍ أَلِيمٍ Once again, the same thing. Alif is not a mouth letter. It comes from the throat. Right? So إِخْفَى doesn't take place. And it doesn't have إِدْغَام either. Because إِدْغَام only takes place with يَرْمَنُون letters. But then at the end, أَلِيمٍ
قُلْ أَرَأَيْتُمْ إِنْ أَهْلَكَنِيَ اللَّهُ وَمَنْ مَعِيَ أَوْ رَحِمَنَا فَمَنْ يُجِيرُ الْكَافِرِينَ فَمَنْ يُجِيرُ الْكَافِرِينَ مِنْ عَذَابٍ أَلِيمٍ
Say, O Muhammad, have you considered whether Allah should cause my death and those with me, or have mercy upon us? Who can protect the disbelievers from a painful punishment?
I'll ask Brother Ali to please recite the next verse, verse number 29. And inshallah, because the last verse, verse number 30, will be left out. I will take the honors and we will complete the Surah Al-Mulk in this episode. Please quickly, Brother Ali.
قُلْ هُوَ الرَّحْمَنُ آمَنَّا بِهِ وَعَلَيْهِ تَوَكَّلْنَا فَسَتَعْلَمُونَ مَنْ هُوَ فِي ضَلَالٍ مُبِينٍ
أحسنتم. Very beautiful recitation. The waqf is a waqf of salah, meaning what? It is preferenced. It's preferable to continue, not stop, but you can stop. It's up to you. And balalim mubin is what? It's idgham. You're connecting noon with me, merging it with them, and this idgham is with ghunna or without ghunna, Ali?
With ghunna.
With ghunna, ahsantum.
قُلْ هُوَ الرَّحْمَنُ آمَنَّا بِهِ وَعَلَيْهِ تَوَكَّلْنَا فَسَتَعْلَمُونَ مَنْ هُوَ فِي ضَلَالٍ
Say, He is the most merciful. We have believed in Him, and upon Him we have relied. And you will come to know who it is that is in clear error.
And the final verse, قُلْ أَرَأَيْتُمْ إِنْ أَصْبَحَ مَاءُكُمْ غَيْرًا فَمَنْ يَأْتِيكُمْ بِمَاءٍ مَعِينٍ Did I recite the verse correctly? Now you correct me, brothers.
No.
Huh?
No.
Which one was it wrong?
On غوراً. You recited غيراً.
غيراً, correct?
Yes.
So what is the correct recitation? غوراً. Right? There is a wow, not a ya. قُلْ أَرَأَيْتُمْ إِنْ أَصْبَحَ مَاءُكُمْ غَوْرًا فَمَنْ يَأْتِيكُمْ بِمَاءٍ مَعِينٍ Correct?
Still there was a mistake.
Where?
يَأْتِيكُمْ بِمَا
Aha, there is a ghunna there, right?
Yeah.
Ahsantum, very good. Very good point. قُلْ أَرَأَيْتُمْ إِنْ أَصْبَحَ مَاءُكُمْ غَوْرًا فَمَنْ يَأْتِيكُمْ بِمَاءٍ مَعِينٍ Correct? Ahsantum. Ahsantum to me.
قُلْ أَرَأَيْتُمْ إِنْ أَصْبَحَ مَاءُكُمْ غَوْرًا فَمَنْ يَأْتِيكُمْ بِمَاءٍ مَعِينٍ
Say, have you considered? If your water was to become sunken into the earth, then who could bring you flowing water?
All right, let's do a collective recitation quickly. From verse number, what was it? 26. قُلْ إِنَّمَا الْعِلْمُ, right?
Yes.
أَعُوذُ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ بِسْمِ اللَّهِ الرَّحْمَنِ الرَّحِيمِ قُلْ إِنَّمَا الْعِلْمُ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ وَإِنَّمَا أَنَا نَذِيرٌ مُّبِينٌ
أَعُوذُ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم قل إنما العلم عند الله وإنما أنا نذير مبين
فلما رأوه زلفة سيئت وجوه الذين كفروا وقيل هذا الذي كنتم به تدعون
فلما رأوه زلفة سيئت وجوه الذين كفروا وقيل هذا الذي كنتم به تدعون
قل أرأيتم إن أهلكني الله ومن معي أو رحمنا فمن يجير الكافرين من عذاب أليم
قل أرأيتم إن أهلكني الله ومن معي أو رحمنا فمن يجير الكافرين من عذاب أليم
قل هو الرحمن آمنا به وعليه توكلنا فستعلمون من هو في ضلال مبين
قل هو الرحمن آمنا به وعليه توكلنا فستعلمون من هو في ضلال مبين
قل أرأيتم إن أصبح ماؤكم غورا فمن يأتيكم بماء معين
قل أرأيتم إن أصبح ماؤكم غورا Sadaqallahu al-Aliyyul Azim.
And that was the end of this episode. Alhamdulillah, we've completed the entire Surah Al-Mulk from verse number 1 to verse number 30. That was chapter number 67 of the Noble Quran. Thank you for the brothers. Yes, we have completed it. Chapter number 67 of the Noble Quran. Thank you for the thank you, brothers, for cooperating. Inshallah, may Allah give you a healthy and lengthy and a Quranic lifestyle, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International School.
Range of programs, spirituality, youth, Eastern tales, table discussions, culture, politics, all produced by IRIB English Radio.
A warm welcome once again, dear listeners, from the beating heart of Tehran. I'm truly excited to guide you through another inspiring day on Iran Radio. We've lined up a mix of content, uplifting stories, thoughtful discussions, and the latest global updates, all carefully chosen to enrich your day. So stay with us and let's take a look at what's ahead. Our next program is The Ocean of Dua, an incredibly deep dive into spiritual supplications. Would reflect on the rich spiritual heritage of Islamic supplications and ziyarat texts passed down from the Ahlul Bayt, as beautifully preserved in collections like Mafatih al-Jinan. These sacred texts are a guide for the soul, leading to divine intimacy, moral awareness, and profound reflection. Then it's time for another segment of radio productions. Next up, Spring of Truth